abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It is Friday, January 10th, 2014. Tom Woods here, and we are smacking down government propaganda Monday through Friday, noon Eastern at TomWoodsRadio.com. And then as a podcast on iTunes or wherever you like to get your podcasts. I hope you guys got to see my video dealing with Mark Levin. I did not want to do this. I don't have time lately to do things like this, but I had to after all the names he's been calling people. And basically, he's also been insulting Judge Andrew Napolitano. I mean, come on. I mean, even his own supporters have to say at this point, he really is acting like a, well, I almost called him a name, but my principle is I don't return his name calling. But if you didn't see that video, you can go over to YouTube, type in Woods Levin debate, or it would be up on my website, on my blog at tomwoods.com. But let's get that ugliness out of our minds right now, shall we? I'll also direct you, though, let's keep the ugliness in our minds for just one more moment. Let me direct you to the special educational page I made up for Mark Levin. I want you to look at it. The special educational page, where else am I going to educate him but libertyclassroom.com? So libertyclassroom.com/Levin. Check that out. You're going to find that amusing. You're going to like the resources that are there. So please do that. Today, though, I am very glad to welcome to the program Steve Silverman. Steve Silverman is the founder and executive director of Flex Your Rights, which is all about educating you on your rights during police encounters. But more recently, we also see Steve talking about jury nullification, which is going to be the subject of a new movie that he's starting up. He's also produced two other educational movies, Busted, The Citizen's Guide to Surviving Police Encounters, and 10 Rules for Dealing with Police. Check out Flex Your Rights at flexyourrights.org. And also follow them on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the community. Steve Silverman, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Tom.
First of all, can you tell us about what Flex Your Rights is all about? What can people expect to find when they go to flexyourrights.org?
Sure. The mission of flexyourrights.org is really very simple. Our mission is to educate people about how to assert their constitutional rights during police encounters and other encounters with law enforcement and the criminal justice system. And when folks go to our website, they'll learn, they'll see videos, they'll see articles about what to do in just about any situation you can imagine dealing with a police encounter under the sun. We've got a very detailed frequently asked questions section where, just about anything involving canines, how to record the police, what to do if police are knocking at your door.
What to do when there's a bear cat outside my house.
Exactly. We really try to get as specific as possible with our FAQs. And of course, these are frequently asked questions. And so if we get the question just once, we'll wait till we at least get it like two or three times before we make it into an FAQ page.
Now, I noticed that you've got a piece up summarizing a panel that you were on the subject of jury nullification. Now, is that your specialization within Flex Your Rights, or are you sort of a jack of all trades?
Oh, I'm a layperson, and so really, and I've been doing this work for about 10 years or so. And so what I find with Flex Your Rights, what I try to identify are places within the law where most citizens do not understand their most basic and fundamental rights. I mean, I really got started with Flex Your Rights back in really kind of like post 9/11. Incidentally, where just, I would have friends of mine who would, talk about their, bad encounter with a police officer. And some of whom even, got busted with tiny amounts of pot, for example. And the, the theme that I found that just kind of like bothered me was that most people, just about everybody in this situation, at some point wound up giving up their constitutional rights without even knowing it. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't a law student, but this is just like this one little piece of the law that I knew and that I understood. And I found myself giving these know your rights talks over and over again to my baffled friends who were surprised to learn that if police pull you over in your car, you're not required to let them search you. You can say, no, officer, I don't consent to any searches. Am I free to go? And I'd give this over and over and over again. It slowly just sort of became articles. And everything I did was always vetted by lawyers because everyone thinks that you have to be a lawyer in order to be able to understand your most basic constitutional rights. But that's not so. And so that's really where sort of the gem of the idea for Flex Your Rights came in, is finding areas within the law that people didn't understand, but then could be, you know, explained in very simple lay terms. And with jury nullification, it really dovetailed perfectly with what we were doing. By, you know, this point, we've pretty much covered almost all of the scenarios, including the Bearcat scenario, about how to handle various police encounters. If you're pulled over in your car, knocking on your door, or you're even stopped on the street, a sort of NYPD stop and frisk style thing. And one of the things that, you know, that I found that a lot of people asked about is, well, have you considered jury nullification? And this is a topic that I had become familiar with when I was an intern at the Cato Institute in Washington, D.C., the Libertarian think tank in D.C. It was 1999, I believe. And I had seen a panel with Clay Conrad, who is the, you know, I would call the godfather of jury nullification.
Yeah, he wrote the book on the subject. I think that he's exactly the guy who wrote the book that you should read on it.
Exactly. He wrote Jury Nullification, Evolution of a Doctrine. And he was actually on the panel too. And so, you know, I saw this panel, I was inspired by it. And I always remembered it, so I knew about jury nullification for this time. And so as I developed these Know Your Rights resources and our two popular videos, you know, it was one of those ideas that people frequently asked us, and she suggested, have you considered doing jury nullification? So just the idea has been gathering, you know, force and gravity in my own mind. And now, you know, we're now putting it into action as we develop this what will be our third film.
Now, I think most people listening to this program know what jury nullification is, but just for the sake of completeness, can you give a quick layman's definition of what it is?
Oh, sure. Jury nullification is every juror's prerogative to vote not guilty, you know, during your criminal trial, even if you believe that the facts of the case have been proven. You know, this is something that every juror, you know, the prerogative that every juror has dating back to, you know, the signing of the Magna Carta, which basically guaranteed that citizens get to decide what rules they're going to, what laws they're going to live under. So, you know, even if the judge informs you in the jury oath that you are only allowed to consider the facts of the case and not the law itself, the truth is, jurors have this power to vote not guilty if they believe the law is either morally wrong or they simply believe it's being misapplied in this particular case.
Now, when you say that jurors have this right, now I understand that traditionally under the Sixth Amendment, it seems like people at the time of the Bill of Rights took for granted that a jury trial involved jury nullification. That was just what the definition was. It included this power. And you can find a lot of the founding fathers who believed in it and so on. But when you say that today jurors have these rights, is it really a matter of they have these rights and they're not aware of them, or these rights have actually been taken away from Americans?
It's a little bit of both. It's so interesting. This is one of these things where once you see it, you can't unsee it. You know, once you learn, you know, you read, you know, Clay Conrad's book, you learn about the history where, you know, you have, you know, quotes from the founders, where essentially they're saying straightforward that, you know, this is the power that citizens have. The founders of the Constitution basically said very straightforward, like, of course, the power of the jury is the power to determine the law itself. This is the basis of the Bill of Rights. And it was well understood by them. It was something that wasn't even questioned or really debated at all, but over the years, something, you know, happened where it was sort of slowly taken away. And really the case that, you know, that really kind of really enshrined this challenge for jurors was the Sparf case, I think, in 1895, which basically ruled that judges weren't required to inform jurors of their rights. It didn't mean that they weren't allowed to, or that jurors no longer had this power. It simply said that judges were no longer required to do this, but the practical impact of this was that judges did not allow any discussion of this whatsoever. And so you have this situation where jurors have this power, but the courts essentially ruled that the jurors kind of have to come almost pre-installed with jury nullification 1.0 before they come in, because they can't count on the judges or even the defense counsel to inform them about this right. And so it's been sort of this secret dormant power that jurors need to know and understand that they can't be punished for their verdict, and they have this power, but they have to know it before they come in. And so it's sort of this strange duality that exists. And that's where, you know, that's where Fletcher writes, that's where folks like BJA, Fully Informed Jury Association, come. It's like, you have to know this stuff before you go in, before you know, when you receive your voir dire, you have to be ready to know about this power, because you can never count on the government, you can't count on the prosecutor, you can't count on the judge, you can't even really count on the defense counsel, because they may have been barred or essentially threatened by the judge, who may not even allow them to make a jury nullification argument if they even know how to do it, because they're probably not taught about this even in law school, which is a scandal in and of itself.
But isn't it actually even more than that? Because isn't there this common joke that if you want to get out of jury duty, all you do is just tell the judge that you believe in jury nullification, you'll be out of there. Doesn't that mean then that, let's say I'm some guy who I show up for jury duty and I right. fully intend to employ jury nullification. If I use those words jury nullification during deliberation with other jurors, does that invalidate what I'm saying? Does it in fact mean that we've had a hung jury? Like, what does it mean? I mean, am I allowed to say that? Or if I wanted to engage in jury nullification, would I have to do it in a sneaky way? Would I have to say, well, I don't think I trust that witness, and then just belligerently refuse to trust that witness, and then they can't convict?
Yeah, this is, again, this really does get to the heart of sort of some of really, and this is something we will portray in our, you know, in our film, which we'll simply call Jury Duty, where we'll show, our hero character will have to get through this voir dire. I mean, first and foremost, like, part of being a jury hero, in a sense, is just understanding that this is an important power that you have. And so there's this prevailing myth that exists among the population that essentially, if you get on the jury first and foremost, that is proof that you're stupid. Because only stupid people get on juries, because they only pick stupid people. Well, this, in a sense, has perhaps become a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. And so the first thing you do if you're trying to be a hero is you want to decide, like, that this might very well be and probably will be the most important and powerful political position you will ever have in your entire life. And so once you see that jury summons is rather not just this annoying inconvenience where you're going to have to go to this place, it's going to be a lot like going to the DMV. It's not going to be glamorous, but you are, if you get on that jury, going to be the most, you know, powerful person in that room. Once you get that idea, I think all these other things can fall into place. For example, yes, during voir dire, if you say during the jury questioning, the selection process, I believe in jury nullification, you will be struck from the jury immediately. The prosecutor will immediately remove you. And so if you're going into this trying to figure out a way to avoid jury duty, yeah, sure, go in there and give a speech about jury nullification. You'll be removed from the jury. But then you'll also be removed from something very important, which is the opportunity to potentially set somebody free who is the victim of a malicious prosecution against someone who has broken, a bad and immoral law. And so once you get to that position where you understand the power, and as a juror, you want to get on the jury, yes, you have to keep the words jury nullification to yourself. And this is something Clay Conrad really gets into, the sort of the details of how to do this. And it's interesting because the idea is for people, among people who understand jury nullification, a lot of them have this misconception that there's no way that a person of conscience can get themselves on the jury without outright lying. But it's not so. Now, certainly there's going to be some facts about you that if they ask you directly, for example, have you ever been, you know, convicted of a felony? And if you have, well, first of all, you probably wouldn't even get the jury summons because, you know, you get that from the voting rolls. But you know, if you've been convicted of this crime, you might want to reveal that. But it's not your job to volunteer the nature of your conscience during voir dire. And so it's not your job to tell them, well, you know, I'm part of the, I don't know, the 58% of citizens, according to the latest Gallup poll, that think marijuana should be legal, for example. You don't need to say that, even though they're trying to weed out those people, no pun intended, if it is a marijuana case, for example, or a medical marijuana case. And so it's very important to not reveal the full extent of your conscience. Say as little as possible. Don't volunteer anything you don't need to volunteer, and let them do their job. And if at the end of the day you're on that jury, you're now in a very different place. You now have this esteemed role. You have more power in that courtroom than the judge, than the lawyers, than anybody else. And it's not, you know, as a member of a jury, you're not just, you know, a member of sort of this, it's not just a democratic system. It's part of the democratic process. But a single juror can veto the jury decision if they want to. And that's a really powerful and important part of the responsibility of being a juror. And this idea that you simply are judging the facts of the case is nonsensical. I mean, there's a great quote by Alexander Hamilton where he says, you know, jurors should acquit even against the judge's instruction. If exercising their judgment with discretion and honesty, they have a clear conviction the charge of the court is wrong. Tom, I mean, it's, and so this is very plain spoken. You have this power, and once you are on that, in that jury, now, once you're on the jury, you probably don't even want to say jury nullification inside the jury room unless you sense that other jurors are feeling the same way. But if you're the only one, you know, and someone's life is on the line, your best practice, if you will, in doing this, I would argue, is to just say not guilty. I mean, you can try to argue, if you want to argue a reasonable doubt defense, you know, and sort of play on some of the themes that hopefully the defense counsel may have brought up, and just say, I don't think they proved the case. I don't trust, you know, the government's witness who is basically paid off with their life so that they could get a better deal with the prosecutor. I mean, it varies from case to case, but, you know, you don't want to say jury nullification in that case because it's possible that you could be struck from the jury in that situation. It's unlikely, but it's possible. But you certainly don't want to bring up jury nullification at any point during the voir dire if you have an interest in getting on that jury and ultimately deciding whether you think the facts have been proven and if you think the law itself is moral.
Well, that passage you quoted from Alexander Hamilton slightly makes up for all the awful things that Hamilton did, and I always appreciate seeing that you can find nuggets of wisdom anywhere in this world. But let me raise an objection that you might get, because, of course, you know that there are people who are indifferent about jury nullification, people who support it, but there are people who are dead set against it. Over their dead bodies are they going to let this principle be vindicated? And some of those people are going to play dirty pool with you. And they're going to raise scenarios like, for example, a case involving a black man getting lynched and a white jury that thinks that the law against lynching is an immoral law. And so they're not going to vote to convict. And to the contrary, they're going to engage in jury nullification. And this just goes to show that this type of power cannot be entrusted to the common man.
Right. Well, first off, I'll say, make sure you check out the transcript or the full video of the panel, because the ending was the best part when the Q&A came up and a former judge brought up this exact same, you know, this same concern. So make sure you check out the article called How Jury Duty Accelerates the Drug War's Demise. You'll see it on our website.
We'll link to it in the show notes. Yeah, we'll link to it in the show notes.
Great, great.
Yeah, okay.
The response I have to that is, first of all, it's important to see jury nullification or jury independence. It's part of the process. It's part of the process where, you know, you have a situation where the police officers in the criminal justice system have discretion over whether they make arrests or not. The DA and the prosecutor themselves have discretion over whether they, you know, what charges they make or don't even make. And then the judge has, of course, his or her own discretion. Ultimately, the jury is the last level of discretion. It's part of the process. Yes, some juries will abuse this. There's no doubt about it, just like prosecutors can abuse their power. But we don't talk about taking away the government's power because they can misuse their discretion. Yet why are we scapegoating juries who have this power? And so, but ultimately, it is the jury has this role. And so whether you like it or not, in a sense, jurors do have this power. Moreover, this is something Clay Conrad really talks about, where he actually like really goes right after like what was going on in the South. If you have a situation where you have a racist society, you have racist police, you know, who aren't even making these arrests, and you have a racist judge, a racist prosecutor, and if you're talking about like the Emmett Till trial, for example, which is one of the most egregious, you know, murders of a young black man by racist whites, you had the police were acting on behalf of the defense rather than the prosecution. And so it's like, and then of course you have an all-white jury, and really the one single obvious reform you can make sure you have that would prevent a race-based verdict like this would simply make sure you have a jury that is reflective of the race of the people in the population. And so if you have an all-white, you know, jury in a racist society, you will never, ever be able to have justice. But to blame it on the jury is really, it's just disingenuous, you know, at best. And, you know, the thing with juries is they're easy to scapegoat because it's not like there's, like, jury guilds or anything like that. I mean, there's groups like FIJA, but for the most part, the jury, after the verdict, they scatter. And then usually the prosecutor, if they didn't win the case, what do? They blame the jury. And in many cases, I mean, you look at the facts of the case and there maybe was reasonable doubt. And so it's always very easy to scapegoat the jury. But when you have a jury in an apartheid state, in a racist state, and you're coming from this community where the police are basically in on it, the prosecutors aren't prosecuting people who lynch people, and you have a racist judge, you can't possibly expect to have anything other than a racist outcome. And so I would argue that there's a lot of jury scapegoating. But now I think when you're looking at it, it's a process where juries are allowing for a certain amount of clemency. I mean, after all, presidents have the power to pardon people. Why shouldn't we allow or respect the jury's role as part of this pardon process, as part of this process of mercy, of allowing a jury to decide that, you know what, in this case, it just doesn't, this looks like self-defense. But the judge will say, no, you must vote according to what the law is, and you have no sense. And we have cases where jurors, after they've sentenced someone to serve, you know, what ultimately became a 10-year, 15-year mandatory minimum sentence for a minor place, if anything, in the drug conspiracy. When they're asked about this by the members of the family, the press, they are shocked to learn the length of the sentence. And they say, well, I thought it was just going to be community service or something like that. I didn't think anyone would actually go to jail for this. And it haunts them for the rest of their lives. And so it's so important that jurors going into these situations realize the power that they have, and ultimately that the verdict is their responsibility, but they're going to be told over and over and over again, you are not to consider the law itself, you're only to consider the facts. And if the jury, you know, sends a note to the judge asking, you know, what's the likely sentence of this, you know, going to be, the judge will send back, you know, a letter saying, like, you are not to even consider
right.
The penalty. That is my job. You know, I'm the judge. Your job is to simply consider the facts, you know, yes or no. Was the crime committed? Yes or no. And that's scandalous, I think. I mean, when jurors are expected to already have to know this beforehand, that they have this power to disregard the law, and when you have judges telling them, essentially implying in a sense that if they don't do it right, that they're doing something wrong or perhaps even illegal. I mean, there's the situation with with Rich Paul, who was distributing marijuana in New Hampshire. And he essentially went in with a jury nullification defense. And it was interesting because there was a camera person afterwards who saw the jurors coming out and asked one of them, you know, how do you feel about your verdict? How do you feel about your verdict? And the juror said, well, I didn't have any choice. You know, I wasn't going to break the law, implying that if he, the juror, had voted not guilty, that he'd be breaking the law. I mean, that's really twisted. You know, and sure enough, you know, the judge, you know, made it very clear in that case, even though the defense counsel was allowed to mount a jury nullification instruction, these jury oaths and these jury instructions that the judges give hold the most sweat because they're the ones that the jury looks to for instructions.
Well, listen,
and
Steve,
ultimately that,
I want to make sure we get to the New Hampshire law before I have to let you go.
Oh, yeah.
I want you to tell us, what does the New Hampshire law say and how does it change things? And then before you go, I want to know, when's your movie going to be ready, because I want to have you back on.
Okay, sure. So the New Hampshire law, in the transcript, in the video, Tim Lynch from the Cato Institute, who's a mentor of mine, really, really goes into great detail about this. But for basically, long story short, is this. The New Hampshire law is very good and it's important. It says, in all criminal proceedings, the court shall permit the defense to inform the jury of its right to judge the facts and the application of the law in relation to those facts and controversy. And this is a big deal. This New Hampshire law is different, and it's, you know, probably stronger than, you know, all the others. It's the only state where there's a recognition of this that's being respected in some way. And so the question is, how's this law been working? And it's been working. Part of it is we don't really know how well it's working, but from what we do know, it's not always working, because sometimes judges will say, this case is not a jury nullification case, and so therefore the defense counsel is not permitted in this case to use that argument, because this is not a jury nullification case. And that's one situation. And so what happened in the Rich Paul case, and I believe that's actually what happened in the Rich Paul case. And that is now pending appeal. And so we'll see what happens with that. But in other cases, the judge will allow the defense to use the jury nullification defense. But then, before the jury retires, the judge will issue the final instruction and make it very clear that your job is actually to only judge the facts of the case and not judge law. So they're essentially saying, like, yeah. The defense lawyer said, like, all this stuff about jury nullification and this, that, and the other thing, but here are the real rules.
Oh, man.
And I think, yeah, and so that's what's happened. That is what's happening. That's how some judges in New Hampshire are interpreting this law, totally flying in the face of the spirit of it. And so it remains to be seen what will happen with the New Hampshire Supreme Court. But either way, like, I agree with Tim Lynch on this. I'm optimistic because if the higher court slaps that down, ultimately, I guess that would invalidate the ruling for Rich Paul. But even if the higher court judge says that was okay, then I would hope that the New Hampshire legislature would look at that and say, wait a second, that is exactly what we intended to not happen. We need to redo this law and to make it tighter and stronger.
Right, right, right. Maybe that'll be the outcome. Now, so tell me when this jury duty movie, because I told people in the introduction about the other DVDs you guys have, but this jury duty movie has me interested. When's this going to be ready?
Tom, right now we are in that place called development.
Oh, okay.
We're in development right now, so I have not set a release date. I've burned myself before in the past saying that our movie is going to be done by this date, and then we blow, all these complicated things happen, and then we have to keep pushing it, and people are screaming at me. So I'm just not doing that game anymore. I mean, it could take some time, but if folks want to keep updated on this, definitely follow Flex Your Rights on Facebook. Follow Flex Your Rights on Twitter, go to flexyourrights.org, and sign up to our email list. You have to kind of scroll down all the way to the bottom of the website, but you'll get there. But sign up to our email list, and you'll be among the first to know what's going on. We're going to launch a Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign sometime in 2014. I want to make sure that I get that right. Of course, do. And so I want to make sure that, you know, everyone who is interested in this is able to know about that. And any of those three ways, or using all of them, will ensure you that you will be among the first to know about when the movie will be ready.
Well, Steve Silverman, I really appreciate your time. I'd like to have you back on sometime in the future before the movie comes out to talk about some of the topics covered in these other DVDs, which sound quite interesting and I think would be valuable for the listeners. So thanks again for your time.
You got it, Tom. Thank you.
All right, everybody. My thanks to Steve Silverman. Please check out my educational page that I made up for Mark Levin. It's libertyclassroom.com/Levin. Check that baby out. I haven't checked my calendar yet as to who's going to be on the program next week, but I know it's going to be awesome. I keep lining up guests and saying, this one's great, this one's great, this one's great. So I'm sure next week's going to be great. Make sure and help us keep the lights on here in our little Tom Woods Show office at no cost to yourself by entering Amazon from our little Amazon widget at tomwoodsradio.com. I really appreciate you guys doing that. It helps me keep my little office where I'm able to make these programs in peace and quiet. Another week of programs is behind us. We'll see you next week. Thanks, everybody.
The Tom Woods Show.